We make a huge difference in the lives of over 1.7 million children in this state every single day, and that work is being done by teachers and the people who support teachers.
They're not here for us. We're here for them. That's what it's about. Kids.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is all about assisting classroom teachers and school administrators to overcome the many walls or barriers that kids face. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is focused on helping you help kids achieve their dreams. We provide resources and ideas to assist you in working with the kids. This show is published and produced weekly and is interview-based, but sometimes the shows are simply me looking at a topic in depth and detail. If there is a topic you would like me to look into for a future podcast, please let me know at smoletto.hg@gmail.com. As a note, I hope that you will stop by Stitcher or iTunes and leave me a star rating and a comment. That helps the show get noticed by more people. Thanks for listening and joining me week after week. I hope that you will share us with colleagues, friends, and family. And most of all, I'm wishing you the very best and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, Steve here with Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12. And today I've got with me from Georgia Vision Project for Public Education, Stan DeJarnett. Say hi, Jan. Well, let me try that one again. Say hi, Stan.
Hey, Steve, and good morning.
Appreciate you joining me today. And I was just wondering if, Stan, if you could talk to everyone about what it is that you do. Let's start first with who you are, okay?
Sure. Well, I'm Stan DeJarnett, and I'm the executive director of the Georgia Vision Project, which is a collaborative effort between the Georgia School Boards Association, the Georgia School Superintendents Association, and about 35 partner organizations with a purpose of transforming public education in the state and also changing the conversation about public schools in our state.
Excellent. So tell me a little bit about what did the Vision Project come out of? I mean, well, what did it grow out of? I mean,
it's a good question. And you know, this work really started back in 2009. It took us a while to pull everything together. But back at that time, we, for better or for worse, I think mainly for worse, had become known, particularly in policy circles down at the Capitol, other places, as the organization that was against everything. You know, we were against this, we were against that. But and when we sat down to talk with people about public schools, it was really all about what we were opposed to and not what we were for. And somebody, I think, correctly posed the question one day, well, you know, you folks tell us what you're against all the time. What are you for? And we had to take a look in the mirror and realize that we really didn't have a collective shared vision for where this state could go. And I think most of the work that has gone on since 2009 has been an effort to develop that shared collective vision about the future of public schools in this state. I think along the way, we've come to some wonderful crossroads in our work. We've developed some great relationships with some partners, both from the private sector, other education organizations, state agencies, and parents, a lot of groups that have, we realize, are really very supportive of the work that public schools do around this state and really want them to succeed. And once they learn that there is a coordinated effort that's beginning in this state to both develop and transform what goes on inside schools, but also to, you know, to share a compelling and clear vision about where we're going, people find that to be a positive thing and are ready to jump on board and help us.
Excellent. So just kind of
One of the things that, and I've heard you present to different organizations mm-hmm. On this topic around the state, and I think that, you know, first of all, who really is your target audience? And I think, you know, we've talked a little bit about this, and there's multiple audiences. So can you just kind of talk about that?
Well, there's an internal audience, and I think first and foremost that really that our primary target audience internally and inside schools are teachers and administrators, particularly principals, school level administrators. I think our other audience is the audience of our customers, our students, our parents, the communities that support public schools and their communities and really rally around them. So I guess we have two audiences, the internal audience and the external one.
Gotcha. Appreciate it. So let's talk a little bit about the concept itself. So if we're talking about this vision project, where is it that you see it going? It's recruiting. Recruiting is not the right word. Now you're gathering some community style mm-hmm. support, and you've got some groups that are helping with it get the word out. What is it? Where is it going? Where is it that you see this? And what is it that it's going to achieve eventually?
Well, where we are right now, to kind of tell you where we've come from since we really started the implementation phase of this project back in 2010. We have 180 boards of education of the 180 boards of education in this state that govern local school systems, 80% of them, exactly 80%, 144 are supportive of the work we're doing. They've passed a resolution of support. They know a little bit about the vision project. So as far as where we're going from there is we're moving the recommendations that the vision project has pulled together from the research, and we're implementing those in school systems all over Georgia. Our goal is to transform public schools. One of the things we've learned, Steve, during this process is what might be transformational in one school district could be standard practice in another.
Gotcha.
I mean, there's some school systems and schools in this state that are doing some amazing, innovative work in teaching and learning and developing a positive culture and climate in their schools. And so that might be standard practice in their district, and we want to share that work with other systems and get everybody to the same level of performance and achievement in terms of not just academic achievement, but also the trust and support for public schools in every community in this state.
So let's talk a little bit about that just for a second before we get into some mm-hmm. of the aspects that are specifically focused on on achievement and so forth. Let's talk about the trust aspect. Part of what I hear you talking about, and I've spent time on the website and so forth, and having heard you speak before, is that the idea is to develop this trust with our state entities, the organizations, and so forth, the trust in our public schools. So, can you kind of go into a little more detail about what you're talking about there?
Sure. Well, I think most every survey that's ever been done about attitudes about public education tell us the same thing. Parents and other people involved directly with public schools, if they feel like that their school that their child attends, their children attend, is moving in the right direction, if they're making progress every year and getting better, if they feel like that their child's having a good, balanced, well-rounded experience, then they trust the school and the people who work in that school, the leaders and particularly the teachers. The further away you get from that classroom, the less the level of trust is from parents and community members. They trust teachers to a slightly less extent. They trust the principal of their child's school. And then as you get more and more disconnected from the classroom in the eyes of, I think, parents and community members, they trust district-level administrators a little bit less. And then as you get to the state level, the trust level really drops off. So parents trust the teacher that works with their child. They trust the building and level administrators. And that's assuming that they have confidence in the work that they're doing. They see that their children are learning, that they feel supported if they struggle in school, and that there are solutions for the problems that every child runs into from time to time in their academic program. And parents value that. So we want to take that level of trust and try to replicate it. And also share that and message that, because the messaging in the mainstream media is basically about somebody else's school, a school right. your child does not attend. And that erodes the public confidence in public schools, because they think, well, you know, my school's good, but everybody else's are struggling. And we want to change that message.
As you're talking about this constant bombardment of, well, for lack of a better term, naysayers about public education, mm-hmm. and it's news media tends to give them a little more attention than the people saying, hey, I like my school, or I like the school where my child goes, and I like the community feel, and I like this, that, the other. Supporters of public education tend to be the smaller voices, sometimes it seems, when it comes to who gets put into the news media or on TV or into the papers, whatever aspect of it is we're talking about. So in trying to link on to this idea of the support of public education, what would be a message that, how are we trying to get it into the hearts and minds of the public, I guess is where I'm going.
Well, I think that, let me draw an analogy. One of the partners that's worked with us years ago was very involved in the messaging campaign for the United States Army. In the late 70s, early 80s, the U.S. Army didn't really have a marketing campaign because they didn't need one. Well, they did need one, and they decided, they came up with the Be All You Can Be campaign. And that was really a very successful campaign. And the reason that it was successful is that it focused on enlisted men and women, junior commissioned officers, as we now call them, the boots on the ground. They didn't focus the messengers of their campaign were not high-ranking military officers and generals. They were people on the front lines that the public could relate to. I think with our messaging campaign, the people that our public relates to are teachers and school level administrators, and because they're the ones that they work with the most frequently. And I think the story that our teachers have to tell every day about the lives that they change through their interaction with students are the story we want our community to hear. And I think that's going to be the focal point of our messaging campaign and our story about public education. We make a huge difference in the lives of over 1.7 million children in this state every single day. And that work is being done by teachers and the people who support teachers.
Excellent. You know, just as a note, I do have to say that I can remember the commercials from the 80s with the Army, and when I went in and went through basic training, I don't remember smiling, you know, because there's always this guy in the morning going, hey, good morning, First Sergeant. I'll never forget that commercial. And, you know, at 6 a.m. in the morning after you just finished running, there was no smiling going on, you know.
But, well, we hope that the reality of what goes on in our schools every day, which I think is a very positive reality, can be reflected in the messaging that we do about what we do, because right now I don't think that it is. Now, it may be a little different in the U.S. military, but there's no arguing that it did change the public's impression
yes.
and support for the military. And that is, and I think that was necessary. Wouldn't it be great if in a few years, every time someone was introduced to somebody and they said, well, I'm a teacher, that they would say, thank you for the work you do. Just like we do with our military men and women and our public safety professionals. We thank them for the work that they do that for our communities. I'd like for teachers to have that same level of respect and support from our public. And I think we can. I think they deserve it.
I totally agree that they deserve it. And I look forward to being part of having to make that happen, because that's something that the impact that a teacher has, I talk about this all the time with people, that first of all, I believe teaching is an art. And second of all, what I believe about teaching is that, people get focused on the wrong image. Because it's easy, it sells newspapers, comedians, it's easy for them to latch on to something and it makes people laugh. In the political arena, they get focused on just certain negative aspects when, the bad in every aspect of our world exists. Whereas it's not the bad that is the majority, not even the majority. It's not even it's a really small part of it. And in any sort of world, in any sort of corporation, in any sort of whatever that that career field is, there are aspects of it that could be changed. Teaching field is just amazing because you have a lifelong impact. You never know when out of the blue you're going to get a phone call from somebody one day, or, in this modern era, a tweet or someone looking you up on social media someplace saying, "Hey, I don't know if you remember me or not, but I was in your class way back when at such and such school, and I just want to say thank you." And it's the type of career field that does that. That it's not, you don't see immediately what happens. In some cases, you might, where a kid turns around or something like this. But the long term is where the real impact happens. And then they suddenly remember and they want to seek out that person who made the biggest impact on them. And so teachers have that impact. And being able to do exactly what you're talking about is getting them that due respect to say thank you very much for helping to guide our children of our country in the right directions. So let's talk a little bit about the meat of what the Vision Project is. What is it made up of? And I know there are specific categories of areas that there are thoughts and ideas in. Can you go into a little bit more detail about that?
We wanted to be able to give schools and school systems a basic template for how to get better. I'm taking great care as I do this work to try to eliminate as much of the education jargon that I got so comfortable using as a superintendent and a principal and a teacher. But there is a template out there. There is a lot of research on strategies that work, not just in teaching and learning and assessment, but in developing climate and culture in a school and a school system. About governance, what's a good way to develop a shared governance that builds capacity in schools and in school districts and communities? What are some strategies for working with the Chamber of Commerce, the business community, the faith community, the civic clubs of your community? How do you network with those to improve and really leverage support and resources for the work that you're doing with students in your school? There's research out there on all that. We really boiled all of that down. We brought in thought leaders for a long time and had them talk about things that were working and things they'd tried that may have great promise, and it might have been the wrong time or it might have been the wrong strategy. But we came up with a set of recommendations that are divided into seven components. And all of these can be found in on our website. We have we call it our research document. It's called A Vision for Public Education, Equity and Excellence. And that's what we had to have some guiding principles that we thought would make us, that we could hitch our wagon to. And we believe that excellence and equity, giving all students access to an equitable and excellent education, is paramount in this state. We can't have a state of haves and have-nots, whether it's in the classroom, the school, the community, or this state. So equity and excellence are the two focal points. Beyond that, we have seven components. One is what happens before children come to school, the early learning component. Actually, we we decided to add that component after we began our work. We realized that if we waited till kids came to kindergarten and started there and didn't acknowledge the work that goes on in preschool and early learning centers all over the state and how we can work with those people as well and those agencies, we were missing an opportunity. So it's early learning. The second is teaching and learning. The third is the resources that support teaching and learning. A lot of that involves technology. And technology access is a big issue in this state. I think it's one that we are making some progress on. And the private sector is helping us with that because we're relaxing some restrictions in our schools about whether children can bring their own technology to school.
Right. And
it hadn't been that long where children were prohibited from having cell phones in schools. There was a state law about that. And we've kind of, you know, worked and you know, going back and looking at some of those old expectations and updating them and to make room for new technology and new strategies, I think, has been part of it. Then there's the culture and climate issue I talked about, the issue of our human resources, our personnel, and how we organize them. And then the last is the financing of public education, and I'm sure we're going to be hearing a lot about that the next 2 years, but an equitable, stable funding foundation for public education is very, very important. Well, I will say this, though. We did go into this without saying that absolutely we had to have more money. You may remember what we were going through in this state in 2008, 9, and 10, and that's when this work was developed during the really one of the toughest recessions this state's endured in 50, 60 years. And so we knew that we had to be able to do better, but it might not be able to require or need to require more financial resources. It was just having the flexibility and being able to focus those resources where they were best needed. Anyway, those are the seven components that organizes the work. We have recommendations. There's 45 recommendations. Most of them can be implemented in a local school system. 28 of the 45, I think it's 28, 27 now, could be implemented in a local school or a district. The rest of those require some kind of state action on the part of the state board or the General Assembly or the governor. And but we think those are important as well. But there's a lot of work here that I think that teachers and principals can embrace and embed in their own school improvement plans.
Nice. I appreciate in looking into the program, and I want to kind of back up just a minute to one of the first ones that you talked about, because it comes out of, as you started looking at it, realizing that, hey, we need to have a component that starts with the before the kids come to school. And I think that's important. You know, matter of fact, I've recently been talking to a local Rotary that I belong to about what we could do, looking at the work of Risley from the past, which is the vocabulary. I'm huge focus on the idea of building vocabulary and the words and so forth, and just looking at what happens to people when to children when from poverty as they start developing the words, and if their family's not using, is not talking with them, is not communicating with them, that basically the Risley's research shows that by the time they get to third grade, they've gotten as far as they're going to go because they're not hearing more words, and that research deals with all kinds of words that happen around the family, you know. And just as a note, I mean, in my family, we used to we would, not only did we read to our kids, sing to them at bedtime, also bath time, do all kinds of songs. My favorite thing at bath time is, you know, I got to go into my, I grew up on old TV shows, so I'm singing about, come and listen to a story about a man named Jed, or just sit right back and you hear a tale of a family. And yes, for all, I too can sing old TV's tunes for you. Sorry, I digress, but hey, I got a laugh out of you, all right?
There you go. Well, we're watching the same shows, obviously, when we were kids, so yeah.
But my point is that coupled with other types of activities, we're reading books, the kids, encouraging the kids to read books. They're hearing we're having discussions with them at the table. They're hearing, we're communicating with them. Well, what all that research showed that from Risley and his colleagues is that they, that's not happening. And so with it not happening, by the time, they're even getting to school, before they get to kindergarten, before they get to some sort of pre-K, they're already behind. And I think that's an amazing component that just like you guys recognize as you're looking at this.
Well, you're right. We do have recommendations. Most of our recommendations about early learning involve developing a collective effort in a community. We realize that it is that not all children have the same early learning experiences. Some are, and I'm not talking about necessarily access here, but we even in a community with a lot of resources, there are private preschools, there are lottery-funded pre-K programs, there are daily half-day faith-based preschools, and then there are homeschools that are run by highly credentialed educators who have chosen to do this. So we're not recommending one program over another or even one curriculum over another, but we have learned that if all of those agencies meet on a regular basis and talk about what they're doing and share the best practices, what we've seen is that children come more equally prepared to kindergarten regardless of the program that they come from. We're not very prescriptive in terms of curriculum in any of our recommendations other than we think it ought to be developmentally appropriate for early learners, and that it also, you know, as students move through the K-12 system, that there's a sufficient amount of engagement and relevancy. And I think we overuse the term rigor a little bit too much, because I think, you know, but I think that developmental appropriateness, relevance, and engagement, I think, are things that as you bring agencies together and talk about early learning, then you find that they become more consistent in what they expect, what they provide to children, and then you see gains in what and the level of equity with which our kids come to kindergarten. And I think, as we all know, our best return on our investment is with early learning. And if, as you said earlier, if we can make sure that our kids are reading on grade level by the end of third grade, then their chances of graduating on time and being ready for a productive career post high school go up exponentially.
It's awesome stuff that you guys have focused on that as well. So let's kind of in looking at the vision project, tell me who are some of the people that are involved? I mean, it's a big group of people. It's not like just somebody sitting in their basement going, I think we're going to come up with this.
Well, the research that we based our recommendations on comes from, it's been vetted by the colleges and universities and other outside organizations like the McCrell, the Mid-Continent Regional Education Lab. I think they've actually changed the name of that, but they've kept the same acronym. But other groups, a lot of outside groups have vetted our work, and I think it's solid. We've been at this now for a little over 4 years, and we've revised our recommendations a little over a year ago to make sure that they were still relevant and current. We've just updated our document itself to add newer research citations because we want to make sure that everything that's been written that really could improve what we do in schools in the last 4 years finds its way into our document. So all of that's been done. It's been done by the Georgia State University Graduate School of Education. They did the updating of the document for us. They committed the services of their doctoral candidates to this work.
Nice.
And so, you know, we're getting a lot of support. Now, you asked about partners. As I said, we've got over 35 now. And I think if you looked at the list of partners, you'll see that many of them are related educator organizations like Professional Association of Georgia Educators and the Georgia Association of Educators,
okay.
The two largest educator organizations in this state. But we also have the Georgia Council for Social Studies, the Georgia Music Educators Association, GALE, our administrator organization with elementary, middle, and high school principals, special ed directors, superintendents, curriculum directors. They're all partnering with us in this work. Beyond that, we have outside advocacy groups like the Campaign for Grade Level Reading, the Get Georgia Reading Campaign, which is a campaign that really is now partnering with the Family Connection Partnership in this state, one of our other partners, to ensure that our students are on grade level by the end in reading comprehension and fluency by the end of third grade. So we have those kinds of group, Voices for Georgia's Children, and other agencies like that whose job is to advocate for children. Our state agencies have been great partners. Now, I've mentioned already the Board of Regents and the University System of Georgia and the Colleges of Education, but we also have great support from the Technical College System, DECAL, the Early Learning Agency, the Professional Standards Commission, and of course our own Georgia Department of Education. So then outside we have Metro Atlanta Chamber of Commerce, the Atlanta Regional Commission. Chambers of Commerce all over Georgia have partnered with their local school boards to support this work. And then we have private sector groups like Georgia Power, the Campus Benefits, American Fidelity Assurance Corporation, and a lot of other groups who work in our space and support the work we're doing. And they've joined us to help drive this collective effort and develop a common message.
Nice. If we were right now, you know, we're if you're in an auditorium and it was filled with principals and teachers from across, and would that be too big of a group, or should I narrow it down to just teachers?
I'll let you decide, but we can take it either way.
Let's do an auditorium full of school-based personnel. So we have
right.
teachers and we have school-based administrators.
Right.
And you were talking to them about the vision project. What would be the one takeaway that you would want to make sure that they heard loud and clear from your message?
Well, let's see. What could I say about one takeaway? If I was talking to a group of educators across the different job responsibilities in a school system, I guess the one takeaway I would want them to leave with the room with is you matter. You make a difference. You are the most powerful influencer of children's lives outside the home. Teachers matter. And I think sometimes with all the negative noise that's out there, I think, and all the pressure that teachers and building level and district level educators are under right now, for accountability, and everything we seem to be throwing everything at them at once. I think sometimes it's easy to forget how much of a difference they make. There are two sides to that coin. They matter and they are powerful influencers. And because they matter and because they can change lives, the responsibility on them has never been higher. Because we have more needy children in our schools and in our state than we've ever had. And even though resources have been tight and the pressure has been great from a lot of new initiatives that have come down from the state and federal level, the expectation has really gone up because our children's future is very, very important. It's a critical time, I think, in the future of this state. And teachers can have a powerful impact on the direction. So I guess the one message that I would want to leave them with is that they matter.
Excellent. I like that. That's nice. How do you see this coming? Do you see the project coming to a close at some point, or what is it that you see when you'll know that you've accomplished what it is that you've set out to do? Is there something that actually, you know, this is what you're shooting for to say, hey, we've accomplished this? What does that look like to you?
It's a good question, and we really spent a lot of time talking about that. We really, really need to know what success looks like when it comes to our public schools. And I think here's what it looks like. When every child in a community, in every community, has access to a high-quality public education from the time they start school, whether that be at the age of 2 or 3 or 4, or let's say, because we have the direct responsibility over K-12, let's say kindergarten, that every child will have access to that and they'll have an opportunity to succeed. Now, another metric is that we'll provide a program that kids will find relevant and engaging and will help them connect what they're good at and what they enjoy doing and help them put the passion that they have into that whatever that career or that endeavor may be, and help them learn how to choose that so that when they leave us at the end of the 12th grade, they'll be prepared for success in college, career, and life.
And so a big part of what your message is, or from the vision, is just like it says, this is the vision for what public education should be. And so the school systems that, do they sign on? Is it something that, I mean, do they say, hey, I want to be part of this? I'm raising my hand right now. Nobody can see me. That really doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but.
Well, there's several ways that school districts are indicating their level of support. One is more of a ceremonial event, but it does acknowledge that they've kind of drawn a line in the sand. Their Board of Education, their local board, has approved a resolution saying we support this work. Now, what usually follows that is the local board, all of our local boards are members of the Georgia School Boards Association, and GSBA has a board recognition program where boards achieve different levels of recognition. Well, GSBA has incorporated the vision recommendations into their board recognition program. So at the policy level, elected boards and superintendents can choose to move up the ladder, so to speak, in their recognition program by embracing a number of the vision recommendations. Another way, and I think this is more on the operational level, is that school districts are incorporating these recommendations into their strategic improvement plans. And our experience has been that when school districts put together a plan, they bring in community and they get community input, they find out what the desires and wishes of their community members are, including their staff, and they develop a plan that really focuses on success short term and long term, and they use these recommendations, that they increase their chances for succeeding exponentially, and they also connect this work to the community and the work that goes on in the classroom. So I think strategic improvement planning has been a real a thing that we've seen really bring about a lot of the improvement that districts are seeing in their own work, and I think it's making it a reality. You're seeing higher levels of student achievement, higher levels of graduation, higher graduation rates, greater levels of success, and all that helps with the level of trust and support in those communities for those schools.
Excellent. Thank you. We're coming up to bringing this to a close, and what I just wanted to do is kind of open it up for you to be able to say anything that you wanted to, closing that you feel like we didn't talk about, or just a, you know, kind of a last thought to send everybody out there in our listening land.
Well, one of our struggles and has been with this project and getting the word out is that we never envisioned this as a state campaign. State campaigns have limited impact in local communities if there's not a lot of media coverage and a lot of attention paid to it, and they have a fairly short shelf life. We really envisioned this as 180 local campaigns. And so I guess one of the great things about our project, and it's also been something that maybe we struggle with and from an identity standpoint, is that we have a lot of school districts around this state that are embedding our work into their strategic planning, and they don't call it the Vision Project. They call it the ABC County Way. But they're getting great results from it. We're fine with that. It's the work that's important. It's not who gets the credit. And this was never designed for, you know, this was designed to bring people together and try to leverage the effort that we're all putting into this. And instead of making it just a coordinated effort, make it a collective effort, because then you build on everybody else's success. So even though we struggle with that, I think that's our best long-term strategy for success because, again, parents and community and teachers support their local initiatives, and as long as it's underpinned by these recommendations, we're fine with them calling it the Houston County Way or the Morgan County One Morgan, or you just pick one, because right. everybody okay. has their own initiative that they rally around in their community. And if they're embedding the vision work, we're fine with that, and we're very, very excited about it.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you very much. Let me make sure that I give you a chance to, where can people find out more information on the web or contact you to follow up and get more information?
Well, right now our website is the www.visionforpublic.ed.org, and you can find all the information you need. We are redoing our website, and it may actually have a new web name, but that web address will still get you to it. We're changing it to www.gavisionproject.org. But either one will get you there for the next year or so. So visionforpublic.ed.org is the website that has all the information, has the recommendation, has our partner list. It also has some great video and some great resources that we're getting some help with from some of our other partners about our campaign to message our success in public schools. And that's called the Spark Campaign. We're trying to ignite a passion for public schools in this state. And that information is on the website as well.
Excellent. The videos are awesome, by the way. I had a chance to see them the other day, and I got to tell you, you got to make sure that you go check them out on the webpage. We'll have links to the webpage on the show notes for the podcast as well. And soon on my blog, I'll also be writing about this, and as well as including embedded versions of these videos. So I encourage you to take a look, go to the website, and learn a little bit more about the Vision Project. Now, one last question, Stan, before I let you go. I sure. ask this of all my guests. I'd like you to talk a little bit about if you think back when you were a kid in K-12, and if you had a teacher that were given the chance today that you would like to thank, what would you say, and who would it be?
Thanks for asking me that, because I ask this question of every civic group I speak to, and everybody raises their hand because they can think of the name of a teacher that made a difference in their lives.
Excellent.
I can give you the name of two, and they're still with us, and so I'm very proud of that. One was my high school band director, Boyd McCowan. One of the finest educators I ever met, and had a tremendous impact on me as a young high school student, and continued to have a great impact on me as an early career teacher. A second one was a seventh grade language arts teacher, Miss Wendy Vineyard, because she helped me find a passion for writing and history, and just she was so excited about teaching and learning that you couldn't wait to get to her class. Boyd McCowan and Wendy Vineyard, two favorites.
Excellent, excellent. I appreciate you sharing that with us. I appreciate you spending time with me today and with our listeners. And to all our listeners, I just want to make sure we will have the links to the website so you can go check out a little bit more about the Georgia Vision Project for Public Education. And I encourage you to share that with your colleagues, family, and friends, and share the message as the Vision Project pushes through the state and gets us all on board for that one vision of public education in the state of Georgia. So Stan, thank you very much.
Steve, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 in the iTunes store. Check back often for updates and new material.
Hang tight, everyone. I'm going to let go of the wall.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12. recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the Heart of Georgia Precinct.